Welcome back, everyone, to the HBS podcast. I'm your host, Samara Greenwood, and I'm thrilled to kick off our third season. Today, I've got some exciting news. We've got a new addition to our team. Joining us is Carmelina Contarino, an honour student in HBS here at the University of Melbourne. Carmelina will be helping produce the podcast as well as hosting several of the episodes. In today's episode, Carmelina and I also dive into what has become a bit of a theme of the podcast, seeing science differently. Science isn't always as neat or as sterile as it is often portrayed. Instead, HBS shows it to be much more interesting. It's a little bit messy, sometimes unpredictable, and full of unexpected twists. In this podcast, we love exploring this much more dynamic and human side of science, the trial and error, the messy labs, and the uncharted paths that sometimes lead nowhere, but often lead somewhere. First, let's get to know Carmelina a little bit better. So first of all, what I'd like to do is welcome our new podcast team member, Carmelina Contarino. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Sam. It is an absolute pleasure to be here and to be part of the team.
Now, I am sure that everyone would love to hear a little bit about you. Can you tell us how you're connected to history and philosophy of science?
So after a long, long break from study, I came back to do an arts degree and took a couple of HPS subjects in my first year. And it's been a mad, crazy love affair ever since.
What was it about HBS that drew you in?
I think for me, it was the fact that there's so many different ways to approach it. There is an interdisciplinarity to it that just isn't really tangible in other subjects. It's open, it's accessible, it is a very, very broad church and allows for a lot of different ideas and ways of seeing things.
I thoroughly agree with that. I really like that term, the broad church. At the same time, we're focused on one thing, which is science. Even that's a fairly broad term in itself, as we've found on the podcast. But at least we have this central focus that we can then bring all of these other ways of thinking about things, ways of researching to it. I can totally see how that would draw you in. Now, you are an honours student here at the moment. So could you tell us a little bit about what your honours thesis is about?
So my thesis looks at how we create scientific knowledge, specifically looking at how scientists view exploratory research and how they engage with it and integrate it within their research practices.
Fabulous. And you interview a number of scientists, don't you, as part of your research? How have you found that?
It's been great. So getting the chance to talk to different people and just getting so many different responses about what they think exploratory research is, how they use it, whether or not they think they are using it, and I suppose exploring why things are the way they are.
So you're doing exploratory research on exploratory research?
I am doing exploratory research on exploratory research.
Well, we will have to at some point do a dedicated podcast on exploratory research. What else would you like to tell us about yourself?
Okay, I am part of CADE, which is the Centre for Artificial Intelligence and Digital Ethics. I've been working there since 2021 as a research associate and since 2022 as a tutor, teaching digital ethics in the law school and also in computer information systems. I'm also a business owner and a former candid street photographer. Nothing untoward, I assure you. Just really enjoyed capturing, I guess, what the original sort of magnum photographers would call that moment of truth. So there's a lot of expression and emotion that people carry with them and display as they walk around day to day that we tend to not notice. And this relates back to my interest in HPS, where it's about looking for things in a different way that sit out in the open and are readily available to us all, but quite often we are either too busy in our own world or too readily accepting of the vision that's been put before us, so we don't necessarily look deeper into it. And I guess to tie it back in, that is why I really enjoy HBS, because I get to pull things apart and question things that we're not meant to question, or that we're told this is as it is. And we get to say, but why? I guess it's my inner two-year-old coming out and just asking, but why for everything?
So now we are, of course, launching season 3 with a bang. Today's episode with Lorraine Daston and Peter Harrison, a great one on historians and scientists, which I'm very excited about. What are you looking forward to with season 3?
So much. I don't even know where to begin. There's a lot more STS coming into this season, which is very exciting. There's themes emerging, I've noticed, Samara. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
I've already prepared a few interviews, which are very exciting. And I have noticed that there is a tendency, I think also from the previous seasons as well as this season, about seeing science differently. So seeing science differently than perhaps our classic ideas of science about objectivity, about rationality, that this is some sort of core way that science is practiced without anything else, without values, without emotion. Of course, objectivity and rationality are essential parts of science, but these other parts tend to disappear or even be completely excluded from science when actually they're vital parts as well. And so I think that's a theme that I've certainly come across in my own study of HPS. I'm really glad that that's also coming through in our interviews, and that definitely seems to be coming through in the interviews that I've done for this season as well, which is very exciting.
So that sort of idea of science as having a view from nowhere, it is untainted as it goes in to do what it needs to do.
Yeah, that classic view, and that the alternate view, which has certainly developed very much from the 1970s, that no, there's a view from somewhere. Science is always done from somewhere, some certain place. Is it down the road in a lab down here, or is it overseas in field work? Those things matter. The context, of course, that's my topic of my thesis, but other kinds of contexts as well, geographical contexts, time. Is it done in the 15th century or is it done now? These things matter to how science is done. There is not just one universal blueprint for science that we can place over it and explain it all. It changes and it morphs, even as it has things that are also consistent and travel with it over time. Is that something you found in your own work and in your own experience in HPS?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, science is a human endeavour, and we are very, I'm going to use the term messy, this is not about cleanliness, but we are convoluted and complex. And because science is a social construct, that is, it's something that is done by many people, you've got many different complexities coming into play. So it's not even that we all think and do things uniformly. We're all working with our own complexities within a very complex system. That, for me, has really come out strongly in the research that I've been doing, in the ways that different people, even though they're working in the same fields and they're taught in very similar manners, have very different approaches to the work that they do.
That is really interesting that it's coming through so strongly as you're interviewing people. That's fabulous. And you touched on there as well, something that comes through a lot in the interviews is that it isn't just a solo enterprise, science, right? And it never has been. There's a great interview that's coming up where we revisit the figure of Isaac Newton. Yes, he does plenty of work on his own, but at other times he's very much engaged with the other scholars in his environment. He's reading other scholars all the time. He's working on a variety of projects. It is about getting a more nuanced understanding of how scientists have worked throughout time, that it is this social enterprise. Even when we're doing it on our own, we're still carrying with us the society that we're doing it as a part of, our scientific community, the scientific ideas, as well as the broader society. And not only is it a vision that's more accurate to what actually happens, but it's really exciting. I think that's one thing that I hope to get across, is that this actually gives some sort of juice to science that's a little bit more lively, I think, than perhaps traditional, more classic views that sort of pulled something out, the kind of dried up science. You know, it had to be formalized and very cold. Whereas I don't think that's how it works in a majority of cases.
Yeah, exactly. Even if a scientist is working on something that has not been done before and they've got new research coming through, it's still based on understanding of what's come before, which is based on understanding what's come before that. And it's turtles all the way down. We don't ever start from ground zero, even though we might feel like we're starting from a blank page. There is always that knowledge and that influence that's come in before to make us look at what we're looking at through a scientific lens, but also why we're questioning what we're questioning, which is informed by, as you know, so many other things.
And that very much ties into Hasek Cheng's podcast episode from last year, where he talked about that idea that we start from where we stand. We can't see everything. There's no God's eye view of nature. We are humans on the planet. Oh, what is the title of that fabulous book by Stephen Chapin? Yes. Never Pure. It's about being humans with limited understanding and limited capabilities. We do the best that we can with what we've got. And so, yes, that means building on past knowledge, even if it means challenging things from the past or adapting things to better suit the future. But it also means that we pick up on things in our current environment. So there might be new ideas being developed in parallel scientific domains, but it also might be ideas developed outside of scientific domains in other areas, whether it's in political areas or whether it's in a new social movement that's coming up. And I think that's a really exciting thing too, to look at science as, yes, it's a fairly definable industry in some sense, but at the same time, it is very much interacting with all of the other elements of human life.
Very much so. Very much so. And also constrained, not only interacting with the elements of human life, but constrained by it. There's that great quote by Arthur Ashe, which is, start where you are, use what you have and do what you can. So we think of scientists as, okay, we've got all of this knowledge, we've got all of this capacity, these tools, all of these things, but they may not have the tools that they specifically need. Even something as simple as not having a specific type of equipment yet, because it hasn't been developed or it's not accessible to you, can impact how you do the work that you do and therefore the results that you get. So all of this comes into play, but the external world certainly does not sit separate to science. It is very much integrated with it in so many ways.
Our discussion reminds me a lot of that quote on day science versus night science. You don't happen to have that there, do you?
The quote by Francis Jacob, where he says, "And when you look more closely at what scientists do, you might be surprised to find that research actually comprises both the so-called day science and night science. Day science calls into play arguments that mesh like gears, results that have the force of certainty, conscious of its progress, proud of its past, sure of its future. Day science advances in light and glory. By contrast, night science wanders blind, is hesitates, stumbles, recoils, sweats, wakes with a start, doubting everything. It is forever trying to find itself, question itself, pull itself back together. Night science is a sort of workshop of the possible, where what will become the building material of science is worked out, where hypotheses remain in the form of woolly impressions, where thought makes its way along meandering paths and twisting lanes, most often leading nowhere."
Such a good quote, isn't it? That wandering blindly kind of sense, although it doesn't seem that, again, our traditional idea of the scientific method, which follows certain stages and develops in a very orderly fashion. This is a much more messy and disorderly image, but practicing scientists have told me that it just so much more captures the process. There's parts of the process, obviously, that are a lot more regular. I know Christiane Camilleri, my supervisor and a lecturer here, talks about that process of getting from not knowing to knowing in some sense. Like, you might not know everything, but you go from knowing that you don't know to feeling like you at least know something. And that process has to be messy, right? You are starting from not knowing something and no one knows that thing. You're not being taught it by others. You are having to find that out yourself. And so, of course, the process is not going to be linear. It's going to be convoluted.
That line in the quote about meandering through the garden and being lost and kind of wandering and stumbling and waking up in the night. But I mean, I'm sure regardless of who you are listening to this right now, we've all woken up in the middle of the night with a thought. Doesn't matter what it relates to, but just it's hit that, something that we've been thinking of for a long time and haven't been able to make head or tails of. It's that kind of thing that you never know when inspiration is going to hit.
Also, what I was thinking is that one thing that has come through with my own experience is that scientific research, in the sense of searching for new knowledge or revised knowledge about some particular phenomena, is not so drastically different to humanities research or even, in my background, architectural design. There are certain factors about going from a place of uncertainty to more certainty, and that there is a creativity involved in that, a directed creativity towards a particular goal. I'm finding similarities there that I think are, again, really exciting. Doesn't mean they're the same activity. It doesn't mean they're directed towards exactly the same thing. But there are patterns there that I think are worth highlighting and acknowledging, because I think, again, it makes science less that sense of something separate from the rest of the world, but much more are something that we all do to some extent, even when we're doing any kind of small creative activity, cooking or something like that, where there is experimentation involved, where there is bringing things together with the goal of achieving some particular outcome, but starting from a place of uncertainty. So I don't know. That was a bit of a ramble, but that were just some thoughts.
No, it makes perfect sense to me. I mean, I know in terms of management, when you've got a problem to solve and you're not sure how to solve it, you gather your data, you make an assessment of what's going on, you see what is actually going to fit, because there might be multiple different interpretations of what you're looking at that might fit into what you're doing. You look at different ways in which you can apply this to get the solution, and then you gauge the result. So it really isn't that different. And I wonder if we look at things and go, oh, we're applying a scientific approach to this, or if this is just a humanistic approach that here's something we don't know. And just as humans, we just want to understand and make something work.
I know exactly what you're saying. And I think that's where the term inquiry is really nice, that more umbrella term that captures science, that captures humanities, and captures a whole lot of other activities that humans do. The act of inquiry can range from very micro kind of cases to macro cases. And science, as you say, is a special case of this. And it does have its own qualities that are different to other kinds. But at the same time, we can also see similarities. I think that's where we're kind of sitting. So our plans. One new thing we're doing this year is we are going to release a hopefully weekly, let's call it a loosely weekly blog post, giving news from the HPS department. What kind of things do you think we'll be covering there, Carmelina?
So we'll be including items such as the upcoming HPS seminar. Hope you can all attend. We'll be putting in any announcements relating to the podcast, and also just sort of general news items relating to HPS here at Melbourne and also a little bit broader.
Another thing I wanted to mention is that Blue Sky is our preferred social media platform at the moment, and it is now open to everyone. You no longer have to have a special invite to join. And again, I want to encourage people, academics of any stripe, but also anyone that's just interested in the kind of things that we're talking about on this podcast to join, because there is a lovely community there. There seems to be some social norms developing that are a lot kinder and friendlier than what has been found on the other place that we shall not name, still active on, because there still is a lot of people there and you have to do what you have to do. And so I do encourage everyone. It is definitely a great spot to get in contact with us if you have any questions or comments or thoughts. That's a lovely place to engage with everybody out there. There's another thing that I wanted to talk about, which is both Carmelina and I are on the committee for ARPS. Can you explain a little bit about what ARPS is, Carmelina?
Sure. So ARPS is the Australasian Association for the History, Philosophy and Social Studies of Science. Worth looking into. ARPS has also recently joined Blue Sky, so give them a follow if you haven't already. Don't worry, this won't become ARPS heavy. We won't be pushing ARPS.
I feel like you've said ARPS enough to be characterised as a pusher. Also, as part of my job on the committee, I'm currently on the hunt for HPS and STS PhD students in the Australasian region. We are currently putting together a postgrad network, so please do get in contact. The best way is emailing us via the form on our website, but also via social media is also perfectly fine. We're going to be organising several activities and we really want to get a nice strong network going. And so that is our introduction to season 3. Are you looking forward to season 3?
I'm really looking forward to this season. Can't wait to get started and look forward to hearing from all our listeners with their feedback, their comments on our social media accounts, and just generally getting to interact with them in a deeper way.
I think that's an excellent place to finish our introduction to the season. We will see you back here again next week.
Thank you for listening to Season 3 of the HPS podcast. If you are interested in the detail of today's conversation, you can access the transcript on our website at hbsunimelb.org. Stay connected with us on social media, including Blue Sky, for updates, extras and further discussion. We would like to thank the School of Historical and Philosophical Studies at the University of Melbourne for their ongoing support. And thank you for joining us in the wonderful world of HPS. We look forward to having you back again next time.